move on to the next case, which is Donald Heller versus Joanne Barnhart.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Daly.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning. May it please the Court, Frederick Daly for the plaintiff appellant, Donald Heller. There's a long line of cases from this court that deal with a properly phrased hypothetical. The cases from Steele to Kosarsky, Young, continually require that the hypothetical include all facts that are based upon substantial evidence in the record. Here we have facts from a mental residual functional capacity assessment form, the only one in the file, from a state agency doctor, Dr. Matcom, who included in his findings that Heller had moderate limitations in the ability to sustain an ordinary work routine without special supervision, in making simple work-related decisions, in performing a normal workday or work week without interruptions from psychologically based symptoms, to perform at a consistent pace without an unreasonable number and length of rest periods. None of those facts, undisputed facts, based upon substantial evidence in the record, were included in the hypothetical. The government, in its brief at page 22, states the law regarding the mental residual functional capacities, and we agree with it. They state that after you get beyond step three, that you must, at that point, the government's required and to consider an expanded list of work-related capacities that may be affected by mental disorders. They go on to say that a properly phrased hypothetical question should account for the claimant's individualized limitations in work-related rather than broad categorical terms. This is precisely what we argued. This is precisely what the lower court said should have been done and wasn't done, and agreed with us that it was error of law. However, the lower court said it was harmless error for three reasons. The court found that the ALJ had, that Dr. Matcom's RFC had also included a statement that Heller could perform unskilled work, and that it also considered that the ALJ considered Heller's activities of daily living and his past work, that he had performed unskilled work in his lifetime. However, the ALJ never adopted Dr. Matcom's RFC assessment. In fact, she ignored it. And there's a line of cases that say you cannot ignore significant evidence. And she did that. She mentioned it one time in her decision, along with two other state agency reports, saying she was giving them, the two others were physical RFCs, this was one mental. She said she was giving them some weight, and that's it. She never spoke about Dr. Matcom's report again. In arriving at the activities of daily living, she misconstrued the record. The ALJ said that he, in fact, Dr. Matcom also misconstrued it. If you notice in his report, when he said that he could perform work, he said that Heller was living alone, independent, living with his three children and taking care of the household. That wasn't true. Based on the record, at the time in 2001, Heller was living with his girlfriend, two of his teenage children, who were age 16 and 11, and the girlfriend was handling the household. By 2003, at the time of the hearing, Heller was living alone. And he testified that he needed help. Somebody came by every day. His older son and his older son's girlfriend, that's the one who at that time was, in his 20s, or maybe 20, would help every day with his help, put him on his TENS unit. He only lived 5 miles away. His teacher, who came and testified on his behalf, his former special education teacher in high school, testified that she came over and helped about once every 10 days. Heller said his sister came by a lot. He said there was somebody helping him every single day. And he also said, and the ALJ found that there was, she wasn't going to find that the medications made him drowsy because he was able to perform his household tasks. But he testified he could perform household tasks from 1 to 2 hours and he was in pain. He said he had to lay down 3 times a day, and he was drowsy. So the ALJ totally misconstrued the activities of daily living, and they cannot be considered substantial evidence to support the ultimate findings. As far as past work, he did perform some simple work, but he didn't perform it very well. This is an SSI claim. He never even was able to obtain enough work orders to file a disability insurance benefits claim. You look at his work history, he's referred to as a very nice person, motivated, everybody seemed to like him. But with his 73 IQ, his borderline intelligence, his inability to do math or read, he lost a lot of jobs, and including the job that he had with the municipality, which the vocational expert said was not even substantial gainful activity. The last job he had was a medium-level job moving rocks around, and he could no longer do that because he has very significant cervical disc problems, lumbar disc problems, herniated disc, not herniated, but he has bulging and significant findings based on the MRI. In fact, the ALJ found that he was limited to less than sedentary work, couldn't even do the full range of sedentary work. We don't know. I know that the this court has sometimes held that a hypothetical question to the VE will sometimes include be considered that the VE took into consideration the whole record. However, here, the ALJ said at page 11 of her decision, this is more like the Kosarski and Young cases, where she said at page 11 that she was confining the facts to the hypothetical.
Confining the facts to what?
To the hypothetical. So she's not...
What was left out of the hypothetical that you're concerned with?
Well, what I'm saying is that sometimes the courts have held that, well, the VE may have taken into consideration something else in the record. And what I'm saying is that the VE was limited to, strictly to, that lengthy hypothetical by the administrative law judge that included the word, he has an adjustment reaction, but she never said what the residuals from that are. And she never included these very important moderate limitations. And that's precisely what this court held in Young and in Kosarski must be included.
What about the specific issue of concentration? Isn't that part of this?
Well,
one of your
concerns? What she did find was that he had difficulties with concentration, and then she dropped it. I mean, that wasn't included in the hypothetical. The government seems to think that the fact that she found that he could, the jobs are limited to unskilled, that therefore the concentration is not an issue. However, if you factor in those three moderates, then definitely that's something that the vocational expert must consider because they're very serious limitations in performing, especially when you get down to sedentary work, performing that type of work. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Kim?
May it please the court, my name is Christine Kim, and I represent...
I can't hear you. That microphone does give us some volume if you get up close to it.
Okay. May it please the court, my name is Christine Kim, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. First of all, I would like to point out that counsel's criticisms of the ALJ's hypothetical question really go to the underlying mental RFC finding. And... I would just like to point out that that the ALJ was not required to incorporate the moderate limitations that were checked off by Dr. Matcom in the worksheet portion of the mental RFC form because the case law and the agency's internal policy have made it clear that the worksheet portion is not in and of itself an RFC assessment, but that that must then be translated into a specific concrete RFC assessment, which the ALJ can rely on. In this case, that is exactly what Dr. Matcom did. He did make the observations, as counsel points out, that Mr. Heller had moderate limitations in some areas of mental functioning, but he concluded that that despite these moderate limitations, or better put, because of these moderate limitations, Mr. Heller was therefore limited to mentally unskilled work.
Well, does that meet the... The objection is whether he could keep up to speed, isn't it? Whether whether his pace and so forth would be adequate. That's the question. And the magistrate picked that problem up, and I'm not sure how successfully he disposed of it.
Well, I don't think counsel has raised any objection to the ALJ's finding that he did not have any limitations in persistence or pace. And while he did find that Mr. Heller had moderate limitations in concentration as part of his B criteria findings used at steps 2 and 3 of the sequential evaluation, this was fully accounted for in the ALJ's ultimate RFC finding that Mr. Heller could only perform unskilled work. Unskilled work is defined in the regulations as work that requires little or no judgment to perform simple duties that can be performed in a short period of time. Now, this fully accounts for a moderate limitation in concentration. There was no issue of inability to perform at a certain pace or...
the specific work that the vocational expert said he could perform and that there were a number of jobs available being an inspector, for instance, on an assembly line, I guess.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a pace connected with that kind
of
work, isn't there?
The vocational expert did clarify that the jobs that he was pointing out were not assembly line type jobs where there is a line going through and you have to complete the assembly process while the line is going through. He said that the jobs were bench assembly, which means that you sit at a bench or at a desk. There is no line coming through, and you are able to assemble the products that are right in front of you. And assembly work is unskilled work, as the VE testified. And again, I don't think that this is a case where he couldn't perform at a certain speed. And I don't think that this was an issue that was a major issue in this case.
The magistrate seemed to think it was a significant issue. Whether it's a major issue, I don't know. But he spent several pages
The magistrate judge nevertheless agreed with the commissioner's decision and found that the ALJ's RFC finding was supported by substantial evidence. Turning to the counsel's arguments regarding his activities of daily living, the ALJ found that that his complaints of inability to work were not fully credible. The ALJ certainly considered Mr. Heller's recitement of his activities of daily living, but he found that that they were not fully credible based on the record as a whole. And in doing so, the ALJ considered many factors that are relevant to credibility, including the objective medical evidence, the medical opinions, Mr. Heller's conservative course of treatment, his medication side effects, and statements from his friend, as well as his work history. These were all legitimate factors that the ALJ was entitled to consider, and his conclusions were well-supported and well-reasoned. Addressing Your Honor's question from counsel's previous argument, again, the concentration difficulties were sufficiently accounted for in the ALJ's underlying RFC finding, as well as in her hypothetical question to the vocational expert. There's no requirement, as Mr. Heller alleges, that the B criteria findings of a moderate limitation in concentration or the worksheet findings in the mental RFC form that Dr. Macomb filled out, there is no requirement that that these must be incorporated into the RFC finding. And the moderate limitations, again, were accounted for, considered, and accommodated in the RFC finding. And unless the court has...
Mr. Daly didn't raise this question about the two reports from the treating physician that were several months apart. One of them was more severe than the other one.
Yes, Your Honor.
Issue?
Yes. Turning to Dr. Shepich's opinions, the ALJ considered all of the medical opinions concerning Mr. Heller's physical RFC, and it's noteworthy that all of the other physicians besides Dr. Shepich thought that Mr. Heller had greater physical abilities. And Dr. Shepich's second opinion, which Mr. Heller argues that the ALJ should have adopted, was contradicted by every other medical opinion in the record, including her own prior opinion, which the ALJ reasonably adopted because the ALJ concluded that that opinion was best supported by the record. It is the ALJ's responsibility to weigh and resolve conflicts in the record, and in this case, the ALJ did so, and she reasonably explained her reasoning to provide a bridge from the evidence to her conclusions. And as such, the ALJ was not required to recontact Dr. Shepich, as Mr. Heller argued in his brief, because an ALJ is only required to recontact a physician when the evidence is inadequate for an ALJ to determine whether a claimant is disabled. And in this case, the ALJ reasonably concluded that the evidence was adequate, and she was able to weigh the conflicting evidence, and her choice of adopting Dr. Shepich's first opinion are supported by the record. For all of the above reasons, the government submits that the ALJ's decision was supported by substantial evidence, and we request that the court affirm the district court's judgment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Daly.
Regarding the physical RFC of the treating doctor, that there were two different ones, and the second one was more restrictive. The ALJ rejected that for only one reason. She said that there was nothing in the treatment notes of Dr. Shepich that would support it. However, as we noted in the brief, the MRI, there were two MRIs, and the second MRI showed a change in deterioration in Heller's condition. And it's not for the ALJ to make medical findings and decide that. In fact, she didn't even address the MRI. She just strictly went on the treatment notes, and that's a medical opinion that the treating doctor gave, and she gave a more restrictive RFC. Regarding counsel's statement that we didn't argue pace, I mean, that I just referred to, well, that's one of the three moderates that we're referring to, is that there's a moderate impairment with pace, along with concentration and completing a normal workday without an unreasonable number of interruptions. The assembly job she refers to, it's interesting that Heller testified and his witness, his former teacher for special education, testified that he failed at assembly line jobs. Interestingly, the vocational expert Finley's report showed on testing, vocational testing, that Heller tested out as not being a candidate for assembly jobs. Out of the 5,100 jobs the VE gave, all but 800 were assembly. So assembly seems to not be the type of job that Heller should be performing. The reason I say the sedentary jobs are even these moderate impairments become more into play is because of the on cross-examination, the vocational expert mentioned that the types of jobs he was giving had production requirements, and that to not include such significant impairments of this particular individual, it doesn't allow the vocational expert to give a true answer as to what jobs, if any, are available for Heller to perform. So I believe for the reason stated in a conformity, this case basically mirrors the Young case, In fact, here in Young we had two moderates. Here there's three moderates. And this court has held that, you know, it's not just a matter of putting the term he can perform work or he can perform simple work, but it states right in the government on page 22 of their brief reiterates that the law is that you have to include consideration of an expanded list of work-related capacities. And the expanded list are specific impairments, as we have here. It's not just he can do simple work, or he can do unskilled work, or he's performed it in the past, but you have to review the expanded list of the these individualized limitations in specific work-related rather than broad and categorical terms. And when that's reviewed and included in the hypothetical, and I believe that would that this court should remand in order that those may be included in the hypothetical. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This case will be taken under advisement.